This is Twa Teams One Street from the Evening Telegraph, the only podcast as obsessed with Dundee and Dundee United as you are. On this episode, it's back to winning ways for Dundee after their win over Inverness. We look ahead to season two for Mickey Mellon's Tangerines, and we talk all things St Johnstone's Betfred Cup win. Hello, I'm Callum Woodger, and welcome to episode 106 of Twa Teams One Street. An entirely pointless milestone I've just read out for us there. No need for that at all. 106, strange number. But I'm joined by, on his week off, amazingly joined by Josh Dunn.
Oh, thanks very much. I've never had that sort of intro before. Amazing. Thanks very much.
But just before we went on air here, we're talking about being nice to you, weren't we? Because it's your week off. So I thought I'll carry it into the actual recording. So that's good. And Graham Finnan, who is, I don't know, on secondment from sport.
Yeah, I'm not on a week off. I never get weeks off. When did that all start? I'll need to see the bosses about this. good to be back. Good to be back. And just a quick look out the window for the weather. It's a bit grey and overcast in Dundee today, but certainly things are looking a wee bit brighter at Dens Park, aren't they, Carl?
They are. Aye, they've picked up a wee bit. Yeah, but I'm more impressed with you there. I don't even have to prompt you for the weather report there. You just jump straight into it.
A total professional now, yep.
Aye. But yeah, Dundee, been a really bad run of late, but sort of turned it around the last couple games over the course of the last 4 or 5 days. Saturday at Morton, it was 2-2. George, what did you make of Dundee's performance then? You showed a wee bit of fighting spirit to come back and salvage something there.
Yeah, they did. I don't think the fan base took a draw at Morton so well after the results they'd had previously. But it looks a bit better now. They've stuck a win on the back of it against Inverness. But Saturday, I thought they were okay. Morton, last week, I think Chrissy Dodd said Morton actually play a bit of football these days. But they didn't use any of that on Saturday. I don't think it was pretty hard watch.
What about the first goal, though? That was a wonder goal from Craig McGuffey. You've got to give him that. That was unbelievable.
That was in complete contrast to the entire game, basically. definitely, up to that point, it was not pretty football at all. The pitch was poor, and that's given it a kindness, I think. And Morton just punt it from the back and chase it, basically. It's old-fashioned. And, I don't know, it's not the best to watch these days. Dundee managed to... They've obviously had troubles at the back, but in the first half hour, it was all Morton. You could see they were confident after that good result at Tynecastle. And Dundee had to kind of hang in a wee bit, and they did that quite well. They started to get a grip of the ball and start playing it about and create some chances. Had one cleared offline, and then suddenly Morton go up and score that absolute screamer out of nowhere. So it just kind of summed up Dundee's season, really. But they fought back. The subs came on and did well. Danny Mullen was excellent off the bench. He was actually a better target man than Osmond Sow, despite being about half his size. And he set up Cummings and scored himself and hit the post. And the other subs as well, Max Anderson did well. They conceded a poor goal, which has been their Achilles heel all season. I mean, Dundee played okay, but they still conceded twice, and that's been their big problem. But as I say, that draw looks a bit better on the back of a win at Dens on Tuesday night.
Yeah, good to see both strikers getting in amongst the goals at Capello Bear. Do you think that's the front two that Dundee are going to have to go with going forward for the rest of the season?
Yeah, well, I'll echo what George said there. I thought Dundee were a wee bit lethargic in the first half and at Capello, a terrific strike from McGuffey, and it seems to be that's the way it goes for Dundee. You know, they have lost bad goals, but they've lost some cracking goals as well. I've got to say, you look back at Willie Gibson's for Queen of the South the week before, and Raith Rovers scored a couple at Starts Park a few weeks back. You know, a couple of real top-end goals. Kai Kennedy, I think, got one of them, and that seems to be Dundee's way. But fair play to James McPake. I think, you know, he used his subs well at Capello, and he got what you need to get from subs. I'm fed up seeing substitutes coming on and doing absolutely nothing. You know, if you're out of the team, surely if you get an opportunity, even if it's only for 10, 15 minutes, go on and do something. go on and put yourself in the team. And the three of them did that, and fair play to James McPake for starting with him against Inverness on Tuesday night. And they all deserved it. And Dundee looked much brighter, I've got to say. For that, they looked, you know, I mean, just going back to the pitch at Capello, I mean, I'm, you know me, I'm a pure dinosaur here. You know, AstroTurf pitches certainly are not for me, and I've said this all along. But when you see Morton's pitch on Saturday, there's definitely a case. Definitely a case for them. Now, I mean, Dens has been pretty bad, I'll have to say, over, and we've lost quite a few games. But in general, the Dens Park pitch is normally all right. But Morton's pitch was really tough on Saturday. If you were watching the game, it made a fool. I mean, the players, some of the players make a fool of themselves. But it made a fool of a lot of players.
Yeah.
You know, with control and balls bobbling about all over the place. Difficult for goalkeepers, for pass backs and things like that. So, yeah, it was a bit of a capital coup patch, to be honest. But Dens on Tuesday wasn't much better. But what we see is it's dried out, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think the weather's been handy recently, I think.
With the firmness and the pitch now, it wasn't cutting up so much and it stayed quite true. And I think that's good for Dundee because looking at them on Tuesday night against Inverness, they've got some really talented players there and they knock the ball about quite well. And, you know, you think that on a better surface, they're only going to get better. But I was chuffed a bit for the three lads who started. They certainly made a difference. They got off to a good start for once, you know. Fine goal from Max Anderson, who's done really well recently. I'm liking the look of this young lad. He's really sort of pushed himself up the pecking order a wee bit. You know, we were talking about Finn Robertson a wee bit last season, but I think Max has maybe pushed himself. I know they're a different type of players, but... Yeah. Pushed himself more at the forefront of getting into the team on a more regular basis. So, well done to him, and a really good performance from Dundee that first half, and they thoroughly deserved to be 2-0 up at half time. I think we all knew what was coming in the second half. Obviously, I think, you know, Neil McCann, it would be interesting to be a fly in the wall in Inverness change room at half time.
He wasn't happy on the touchline anyway.
No, I could, and you know what Neil McCann's like, you know, so they'll have come out and known in certain terms, knowing the HUD didn't prove. And they did that, and they made life a wee bit difficult for Dundee, but I still felt Dundee were the better team and they were looking comfortable. And then the inevitable happens, they lose a goal, Todorov, a fine header from the lad, but Markham wasn't the greatest.
No, it wasn't.
Allowing the cross into the box wasn't the greatest. And I know that James McPake said in his after-match comments he was quite happy to see Inverness scoring because it showed his men could see out the game. He showed a bit of character. But I'll tell you what, he was in the minority because I think most of the Dundee fans that would have been watching on his stream would have been hiding behind the settee looking at the last 15 minutes. Every time the ball went in the box, he thought, oh no, here we go again.
Well, that cross in the 93rd or 94th minute.
Yeah,
he's heading for
Todorov. Just skimmed it. It was a Todorov as well. Yeah, just skimmed away from him. But Dundee were deserved. One, as a new McCann graciously pointed it out at the end. So, yeah, they've put themselves back on track a wee bit. And, you know, I've always said this, I think there is hope for Dundee. They've got good players there. I do believe that Jason Cummins will score goals for fun at this level, especially if they get the ball into him in the box. His upper body strength is so strong, he's quite good at turning and holding men off and getting goals, as we've seen already. And there's a few more to come from between now and the end of the season. So, yeah, hopefully Dundee have had their wee rough patch and that's them now pushing on again.
Yeah, three goals in three for Jason Cummins now. And we've talked about his impact. Danny Mullins impact, young Max Anderson having a good game against Inverness on Tuesday night. But another man who's came back into the fold recently, to the surprise of some, George, is Declan McDade. He's made a wee bit of a difference as well. Gets the assist for Danny Mullin against Morton, and he's involved in one of the goals on Tuesday night as well. He's looking like he's going to remain a viable player despite you know, having been shipped out on loan to Partick. And
I think it might be a surprise to Ian McCall down at Thistle, as I've been instructed by my Partick Thistle supporting pal not to call them Partick.
Yeah, they're Partick Thistle.
They don't like that, apparently. I know, there's lots of thistles, but never mind.
Yeah, they can rename themselves Maryhill Thistle. That's where they're really based anyway, so.
it's such a strange one, because obviously the deal was agreed, back at the end of January, and James McPake kind of talked about it last week or the week before. And it had actually been McDade's idea. He hadn't had a great season so far. He was a bit low on confidence and hadn't been getting a game so much. So he wanted to go out and then get some games and build his confidence up and then come back.
Yeah.
But it seems like since he made that decision, he's been excellent in training, and he's the manager suddenly deciding, well, why can't I play him when the loan deal's not actually started yet because of the pushback of the League One and stuff. So it's interesting to see what's going to happen with that, because I don't know how all these rules and things are going to work with the delayed start to the season, and whether that deal will still be on or off. I'm pretty sure Dundee could probably cancel it if they really want to. So it could well be back in the team. And I have to say, when I saw Paul McMillan signing, I thought that'd be good to see McMillan on one side, McDade on the other. That'd be really interesting. And they both of them played well.
Yeah, we've seen that the last couple of games, and they've made Dundee look a bit more dynamic and dangerous in the final third, when you've got strikers like Mullen and Cummins who know where the back of the net is, and so, also have good movement. Yeah. And so as well, of course, as a target man, it's a really good quality of a player they've got there.
And McMullen's what, assist every game now. He's shown why they tried so hard to bring him in. Although I have to say, on Tuesday night, it wasn't his best game, I don't think, by his standards, but he still came up with an assist for Max Anderson. And McDade looked really dangerous. He looks much more confident than he did in the first half of the season. He was cutting inside and shooting quite a lot against Inverness, although second half shooting, I think the guys in the wee security office in that corner were ducking for cover for a couple of them, to be honest.
Do you think that was the whole... I know he pushed for the move himself, but do you think he maybe just needed the wee kind of kick up the backside to get back into the form we know he can produce? Or?
Aye, maybe. Maybe... Obviously, it has to come from the player themselves to recognise whatever they need to do, or maybe it's just the chance for playing for Dundee's kind of gone from, because he's agreed to go to Partick, and then suddenly all that pressure's off in training, you know, because he doesn't have to, he's not thinking about doing everything to get in that team on a Saturday, and it maybe just took the pressure off him a wee bit and has allowed him to kind of find his way again, find his confidence. I'm sure Ian McCall and Partick aren't overly chuffed that he's suddenly becoming an interesting first team player again for Dundee, and they might lose out on him, but that's only to Dundee's gain if they get a good Declan McDay, because we all know what he can do when he's on his game.
Absolutely. The win over Cali Thistle lifts the pressure on James McPake a little bit. It's fair to say that he's been feeling the heat from, certainly from the supporters over the last wee while. They've got a huge month coming up now, Bear. Seven games still to play in March. He's going to have to get a lot of things right and a lot of results right to you know, salvage the season and his job, you'd have to.
Yeah, I mean, but as we said, you know, there's always pressure on Dundee manager in that league. You know, they're expected to be up there challenging, and the objective at the start of the season would have been to win the league. Obviously, Hearts are there, so a realistic objective for James McPake is second. And I still think Dundee can do that if they can string a few victories together.
Yeah, they're back in fourth place now, aren't they? So they're in the games in hand.
The other side of the coin is a couple of defeats and you can plunge in that table because everything is so tight. You know, but I do expect with the players that Dundee have got, I mean, they do have a couple of tough games coming up, but I would suggest a couple of tough games for Hearts and Dunfermline as well. You know, Dundee look as though they're now back on it again, which is good. So hopefully they could keep that level of performance up. And then, well, we're looking at the two games there. Hearts away and Dunfermline are tough. You know, they will have opportunities over the next seven games or so, you say, Callum, you know, to pick up a fair chunk of points. What they can't do is have that wee run there where, you know, they only picked up, I think it was 1 point out of nine or maybe even more than that, you know, 2 points out of 12 or something like that. But, you know, they need to be right on it between now and the end of the season. Worst case scenario for James McPake is a playoff spot. Anything outside that, you know, and things start to look really difficult for him to take on again next season, I would suggest.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that.
I would certainly think so. I mean, but they're playing well. They look bright. Paul McMahon does what he says on the tin. Brought real pace to that right hand side. I've got to say, watching the game last night when they were under a wee bit of pressure, you know, when the ball was cleared and it was played out, he was the man that was making the break first, you know, to get back into the, you know, the opposition. So, and he covers the ground quite quickly. He was up on the Cali Thistle defence really quickly. Declan McDade, great to see him back. You know, James McPake said that, you know, that the door was still open for McDade. I think that was on the back page of the telly. And so it's proved. I think Declan McDade, the biggest thing for Declan McDaid is you've got to say, is he going to manage to get through the rest of the season without having to self-isolate again? You know, because how many times this season, he's obviously got that app uploaded onto his phone and he must get contacted every couple of weeks saying, you've bumped into somebody that's had it, you know, that's got the coronavirus, you only need to be out for 14 days. No, but they're doing well. So, yeah, let's take it on with a bit of confidence now. Let's be upbeat about Dundee and the hope that they can go on a wee bit of a run. I do think the league's beyond them. You know, that's certainly the main thing for them is getting themselves in a playoff position. And ideally, you want to be in the prime playoff position, which is second in the table.
Yeah, I spoke to Lee Wilkie for his column this week, and he pretty much said, and this was before the Inverness game on Tuesday night. He pretty much said that, you know, it's been a project. It's been a long time in the making Dundee, making James McPate the Dundee manager, and he deserves time to see it out. He's not in a position where they can't achieve promotion, you know, that's still well within their grasp. If he deserves to see the season out, especially with all these games coming up, you know, changing the manager now maybe wouldn't make much sense. You know, let him see the season out and a decision can then be made on whether he's the man to take Dundee forward or not. They can still make the playoffs, of course. They're in the playoffs right now. They can still get second spot. The league, I agree, is probably a little bit beyond them now. It looks like it's Hearts to lose, but certainly that's one school of thought. The other school of thought is, you know, bringing someone else in now and giving them time to work with the players. But I think he's showing, and even in his signing policy, you look at the quality of players he's brought in, he deserves a wee bit more time to work with them between now and the end of the season to try and get Dundee promoted back to the Premiership. With these games coming up over the next few days, George, Hearts away on Saturday, Dunfermline away next Tuesday. We know how tough those games are, probably the toughest Dundee will face all season. Missing Charlie Adam recently has been huge for the squad, you know, on and off the pitch. Obviously he's out with a positive COVID test. Is he expected to be back for those games?
I would doubt it. I don't know exactly when he's expected back, but no, I wouldn't expect him to be anywhere near those two, I don't think. And he is a huge loss. I mean, he's the captain. He's kind of sets the tone, and everyone obviously looks up to him at the club because of the career he's had and where he's been. But you have to say, I mean, they struggled through it on Saturday a bit on the back of how it all transpired on the Friday when they suddenly got that positive test and Charlie had to go home and they couldn't do any training. They thought Liam Fontaine was going to have to miss the game as well and have to self-isolate. And the physio, Jerry Dockett, as well, having to self-isolate, which meant that Morton actually had to, the Morton physio had to double up on both teams on Saturday. And I think there was a whole lot of, there's just so much going on before that game on Saturday. I think you can maybe see the way that the players played on Tuesday that they can cope without Charlie, but the real standout bit was the set pieces, and it was really strange not seeing Charlie Adams step up and take the corners and the free kicks and all those, and the quality delivery obviously isn't going to be the same. I think that the amount of corners and free kicks they had on Tuesday night, I think with Charlie's delivery, they probably could have added a couple more goals, to be honest. So he will be. He's the talisman. I mean, I keep writing it in the paper. People are probably fed up reading it, but there's no other way to really describe him. He's the main man in the team. But I think also with combined, it's not like a normal injury where he can't play, but he's still in the dressing room and he's still giving advice and pep talks and stuff at halftime and before the match. They kind of missed that experience as well, I think. Yeah. But I don't think they should be going to Hearts with any real fear. I don't think they're playing particularly well. They've obviously got real quality and they've shown that, but they beat them the last time they played. They should remember that. And Robin Nielsen was actually at the game on Tuesday, along with, it seemed like, everybody in the championship. Dick Campbell was there as well, and there's all sorts of people. I'm sure Robbie Nielsen will have seen some stuff that Hearts are going to have to watch out for in the way Dundee played on Tuesday. So I think it's going to be a really, really interesting game in the way. Interested to see how Dundee play in that against obviously the best team in the division, but one that's not particularly flying, really.
Yeah, George mentions it there, Bell. You know, this is a team that Dundee have beat this season, you know, and quite recently as well. They should be going to Tynecastle with the aim of picking up something and getting themselves right back in that mix for second spot. Looking at the table now, they're, you know, 3 points behind Raith and Dunfermline. They've got a game in hand in Dunfermline and obviously play them on Tuesday night. So it feels like quite a pivotal couple of games for Dundee this season.
Yeah, it will be. Looking at Tynecastle first, I mean, obviously, Hearts weren't. I saw Hearts the other week and they didn't look fantastic, I've got to say, but they look as though they're going to sort of stumble towards the line. They've got such a big gap on the rest of the team. But Hearts were really, Robbie was really miffed after the game at Dens, I've got to say, when they lost that one. You know, he felt his team were sort of hard done by a few of the decisions that went away that night. But on the other hand, Dundee went to Tynecastle first game of the season, yeah, which was an absolute cracking game, I've got to say.
Yeah.
Some fantastic goals. Even though Dundee lost 6-2, I wasn't too disappointed. I was more disappointed that they lost a couple of late goals, because I thought 4-2 would have been, you know, a fairer reflection on what Dundee had put into the game. But, you know, Dundee have got to go there and show that they are a different team now. They're a harder nut to crack. And I hope that's the case. On the Charlie Adam situation, I think there's a positive to be taken from that. It's the fact that, I mean, we'll hope that Charlie, you know, gets over it pretty well. He's a fit man, so I'm sure he will. But if there's a positive to be taken from it, it's the fact that Charlie Adam has been sort of pivotal in Dundee games this season and played in the vast majority of games. He hasn't missed many, you know, and he's played nearly them all. And he at 35 to play in the centre midfield, it's a tough shift, you know. And you've seen him a couple of times going off and holding his hammies and maybe having a wee feel of his groin and that, mm-hmm. just to, you know, maybe there's a few things. So that might have given any sort of aches and pains a chance. This sort of wee rest he's getting, I'm sure he'll not agree with that. He would much rather be on the park. But I might give him a chance just to, you know, get refresh the batteries and then go for a real push towards the final few sort of running towards the end of the season. I'm looking at that sort of prospect. So, yeah, fingers crossed that they get Charlie back sooner rather than later. But the team played well against Inverness on Tuesday, and I expect the same on Saturday.
There's nothing to suggest that walking off the pitch holding your groin is indicative of an injury, is it? I mean, it could be any number of reasons.
I think most players do that, don't they? I mean, that's just a player's trait. I mean, there's a lot of players do it sort of before the game. That's always embarrassing when you see them coming on Sky, you know, and here's a subby coming on, the guy's holding up the board and the player's got his hand in his shorts and a rake.
All right, enough slandering Charlie, let's move on a little bit here. Some sad news came out this week about a former Dundee player, Kevin McDonald. Now at Fulham, he's to undergo kidney transplant surgery. He's been living with kidney disease for the last 4 years, and it's only got more severe as time's gone on. I think what he was saying was he was hoping to sort of see out his playing career and get something done about it afterwards. That's not been the case. He's not played a single minute for Fulham this season. He's been coaching. You know, his kidney function is really, really low. He's only 32, but it's a tough one and one that we'll be wishing him all the best for, because he was a good player for Dundee.
Yeah, he was. He was. I mean, he was a byproduct of Dundee's administration in 2003, when effectively the club had to get rid of all the big earners and they were left with kids. The kids had to come out. Alan Kernahan was in charge, and I'm sure it was guys like, you know, Kevin, Paul Dixon, Scott Robertson, or three you can remember. There was loads came in.
Forsyth was on, wasn't he, as well?
Yeah, he could have been about at that time as well. Yeah, so yeah, these guys were given their opportunity. I think Craig Forsyth, I wonder if he might have been in the team at the time. I'm not too sure, Callum, if he'd maybe just broken it slightly early. But anyway, these were guys were given an opportunity. Kevin McDonald was straight away, you know, you saw that the sort of prospect he was. He covered the ground so easily, comfortable with the ball at his feet, and you always knew he was destined for bigger things, and so it proved. So it proved. He got a great move down south, and even, I think it was a Burnley he went to first.
Yeah.
He escapes me. Yeah, he went to Burnley, and even going to Burnley, you know, I think there was talk he might move to Arsenal. I think Arsene Wenger was showing an interest at one point. So yeah, but he still went on and had a terrific career down there. He played at a high level for a long, long time, and you see you saw the last time I saw him playing for Fulham, he still looked that same player that was at Dens, you know, very easy on the ball, you know, comfortable in possession. Obviously, physically much stronger than he was. He was a big gangly lad at Dens, but obviously in England, you need to fill out a wee bit. But no, terrific. And to see that he's been carrying this for this amount of time, you know, you can only take your hat off to him that he's sort of, he's obviously kept it himself. But reading the piece in the telly yesterday, you know, he just, it's typical Kevin McDonald. He just so laid back about the whole thing. Oh, well, you know, I've got to get another kidney, you know, but we'll just keep playing. I'll speak to the doctors. Have been just so laid back. And that's the way Kevin treats life, I think, which is a great thing to have. You know, he is an easygoing guy. So, it's sad, but it's, you know, I'm sure he'll get the best possible treatment and he'll get back on the road. And hopefully he's doing a bit of coaching. Hopefully that'll continue down there. You know, he's got his foot in the door on that one. So, yeah, we'll wish him well.
Yeah, the real stellar career, George. And
yeah, definitely. I mean, it's testament to him that he's had such a good career, considering, I don't know how much it must have affected him through the week when he's preparing for matches, or even if it's affecting him during matches. It seems incredible that a professional athlete can deal with that and still be playing at such a high level. Which is testament to him, really. It is incredible hearing him talk about it. So on the Fulham website, when he was saying that, I think it was one of his brothers or the couple of his friends were offering to donate their own kidneys.
Yeah, for the transplant
to help him. Yeah. It's amazing, really. And it's sad that I'm sure he would have liked to try and wait till at the end of his career before doing it, but. I mean, these things don't wait for the end of your footballing career sometimes.
No.
So you never know. I mean, he's still at an age where he may be able to come back and play football again. You never know. But it seems like there's things more important than playing football, and that's enjoying your life and being healthy, really. And I wish him all the best. Excellent player, and obviously. Yeah, I can't really say anything more apart from wish him all the best.
Yep, okay, brilliant. We're going to take a hop, skip and a jump across the street to Tannadice. Yes, Dundee United, a draw at Kilmarnock on Saturday, one each at Rugby Park. Probably a game that's now ended their hopes of making the top six, if we're being realistic. Of course, they can still mathematically do it, but... Graham, it's looking a bit of a tall order for the Terrors now. They're 4 points behind St Mirren, two games to go, and those two games are against Celtic and Aberdeen. It's going to take a lot for them now to make that top half.
Yeah, I think they've run their race. I mean, they'll obviously give it their best shot in those two games, but it's hard to see them. You know, obviously St Mirren have got to slip up as well. So St Johnstone are probably still in the mix slightly as they're too. But,
yeah.
You know, I think United have got the hardest task of all the teams that are involved there. St Mirren are in the box seat, you've got to say. Maybe they're playing. You know, but you always live in hope. It is two home games and you hope that... it's a pity it's not Aberdeen first. I think they might have had a chance there to get another win. I think they probably need to give themselves a chance. You know, two draws won't be enough because of St Mirren's goal difference, I think, Callum. Is that correct me if I'm wrong?
Yeah, well, they're 4 points ahead, so two draws wouldn't be enough.
No, two draws, sorry. Yeah, so they need two wins. Sorry, that's what I'm trying. Yeah, they need two wins. Absolutely. So much for that. Yeah. Yeah, and going back to the Kilmarnock game, I think it was a typical Dundee United performance this season. It wasn't a bad performance. You know, they defended relatively well. The prolific Adrian Sporl has got his goal again. I mean, he's got three or four. He gets in there, to be fair. It took a wee bit of a deflection, but you'll take that. You know, he's always in there looking to get on the end of something, and he's obviously not frightened to have a pop at the goal. And they'll be disappointed that they didn't hold out to get the 3 points, because I think we spoke about it last week. It was the game they really had to go and win to give themselves an outside chance of getting into that top six slot and put a bit of pressure on. But... you know, let's look at the opposition. Kilmarnock were desperately needing something. Tommy Wright needed a point, you know, and where they are in the league, you knew they were going to try to get back into the game in some shape or form, and they needed that. They needed that point to get Tommy up and running, and they need a few more to get themselves out of the mire at the bottom. But United looked a bit shy going forward again, you know, and it's been a problem this season. You know, I feel for the guys up top because there wasn't many chances. There wasn't many chances. After a few weeks looking like they'd solved that problem, they again looked as though that it was, you know, there wasn't much going up to the front men. And like everything, it's a percentage game. If they're not getting the ball in that box, they're not going to score goals. So, yeah, disappointed in that respect. But I draw Rugby Park, in the grand scheme of things in the Premier League, it's not a bad result. You've not lost the game. You know, you've seen Benjamin Seagrass putting in our top performance as well. I think he's been really, over the course of the season, the top man. So they'll give it their best shot. That's all they can do and hope for the best.
Yeah, they had a couple of chances to win it at the end, potentially, George. Lawrence Shankland and Mark McNulty both been denied. They do seem to have turned a corner a wee bit in recent times. It's just a case of now really consolidating themselves in the Premiership between now and the end of the season and going again next term.
Getting that top six is beyond them, I would say. I'll need to pick up 6 points, but it's not always the most exciting way to end a season if you're in seventh in the Scottish Premiership, because they're in a kind of 10 points ahead of the relegation points. They're in a position where they're really not going to get dragged into that, but they've still got games to play. It's kind of, so it's up to them and up to the management to keep them going and try and finish on a high and set them up for next season. So there's also hopefully be a chance for, we've seen plenty of young players get the chance already this season, but hopefully if United just pick up a couple more results and then get them well clear of any danger, we can start seeing these young lads really get some game time in the top flight that will stand them in good stead for then hopefully helping out the first team next season. I think that's always a positive for a club that finishes in that kind of position. It's just the way the Scottish Premiership set up. There's always one or two teams that end up kind of no man's land with a few games to go and can't go up, end up with more points than the team in sixth, and it looks kind of strange.
That's probably what will happen. It always seems to do that. But I think United are pretty much exactly where you'd expect them to be, and where it feels about right for them at this stage. I think you've got to doff your cap to Mickey Mellon and say he's done a really good job of establishing United so quickly in the Premiership that they're not feeling the threat of relegation breathing down their neck. You know, they had these aspirations to make the top six, and they've shoot their shot and they've missed, but they've got so close and they're sitting in seventh now. He's been building this team. You mentioned the young players he's brought in and the way they've developed, your Lewis Nielsen's, Logan Chalmers, guys like that. And on top of that, he's signed pretty well as well with Ryan Edwards, Shondo Fuchs, Benjamin Seagrass, another great game. He's got good players there. I think it's just a case of now focusing on next season and having a go at that top six again. And he talks about it all the time, a continued development job. And, you know, I think a lot of time the fans, that's not what they want to hear. You know, they want to hear about their team, you know, being super successful and running away with it. But he's been realistic, and I think he's been pragmatic, and it looks like it's going to pay off for them in the long run. This summer and how things go on and off the pitch for United will tell us a lot about what it's going to look like next season. But for this season, yeah, just keep it going, you know. Yeah. We've got two tough games before the split. It's going to be difficult, but after that, you'd fancy United to make a good fist of it in that bottom six.
Yeah, I mean, I would say to George, well, it's sort of United are seventh, and maybe there's no real pressure on them. That there is a financial reward to be gained from seventh rather than eighth, eighth rather than ninth. You know, so let's not sort of make light of that. And plus the fact there'll be exciting games because the teams around them, they are involved in relegation battle. So I always feel that, you know, there's probably more of a case for the bottom six being more interesting than the top six, and the way the Rangers are hurtling towards the title, it could well be that. So yeah, there's still plenty to play for, and the financial aspect even more so is highlighted this season because of where we are because of this pandemic. So yeah, I mean, Celtic at Tannadice and Aberdeen, good games. So disappointing. You think of the you know, full houses at Tannadice for those games. Yeah, you know, normally, you're looking at it, and you know, it's soul destroying seeing that. But hopefully, we're moving in the right direction on that one. That's something we can hopefully see change next season. But the fact for United is, you know, that they're still there. You said that, Calum. He's done magnificently well. And I think a lot of United fans should have a look around and say, I think he's in a club of one in that top flight as the managers in the Premier League who didn't bring a player in during the transfer window. So you can see how restricted he has effectively been, you know, over the last wee while. So to keep United in there and keep their heads well above water, they got when they were struggling, they got those two wins which were absolutely massive.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
To keep themselves out the dogfight at the bottom, so they can enjoy. They can go there and enjoy the Celtic game, enjoy the Aberdeen and the rest of the season, but still have the knowledge that, you know, if you're not going to finish sixth, make sure you get that seventh place, because it will give you an extra. I'm talking off the top of my head here, 50 grand maybe, possibly.
No, I think it's more than that.
Is it more than that?
Well, I think it's in the hundreds. Yeah.
There you go. Well, there you go. So that's a good enough. That's a good.
Hundreds of thousands, not £100.
No.
But
what, hundreds and thousands, like the wee things you sprinkle on your ice cream?
I agree. I think he's not always got the credit this season, Mickey Mellon. But I mean, all you have to do is look at where United have been and where they are now. I mean, obviously he didn't get them up last season, but it's Dundee United's best season in what, 6 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. Probably around that.
A long time.
So the football hasn't been spectacular this season, but it's got the job done. Done the job that Mickey Mellon was brought in to do. Keep them well out of trouble and as high up as possible. Have a go at the top six. I think we discussed at the start of the season whether they could get that. So I think everyone was kind of thinking they'd be around where they are now. So it's job done. And I think it'd be really interesting to see over the summer what Mickey Mellon does, how many players he brings in, what positions he identifies that he wants to improve on. As I said, what players he brings in to really make that squad his own, and where United go from there.
Absolutely. Got to keep looking upwards, I suppose. Adrian Sporla, he'll be assessed for the weekend. He actually had to come off after scoring against Kilmarnock at the weekend with a heel injury. I think it's been bothering him for a wee while now, and he's going to have to get that looked at and assessed for Sunday's game. So that's a bit of a blow for him. Yeah, he doesn't seem to have much luck at the moment. I think when Peter Pollock got sent off against Livingston, he was actually the boy that was sacrificed to bring Ian Harkes on. So he's, as soon as he scores, he scored in that game as well. As soon as he scores, he gets chucked off. So
job done.
Not looking good for Adrian at the moment, but job done, off the pitch. But hopefully he can make it back for the Celtic game. Another story which came out of United's camp this week was really, really, really sad news. We've spoken about Kevin McDonald on the Dundee side of things, and you know, your heart goes out to him, but your heart really has to go out to Mark Connolly. This week he returned to the side. He'd been out for a while with a family bereavement. He had to return to his home in Ireland. His dad wasn't well. His dad sadly passed away in the middle of last month after a short battle with cancer. He was only 67. Mark was back in the team at the weekend there at Kilmarnock, and he was good enough to come and speak to me about what's been going on for him off the pitch. And you know, you can't help but come away from the chat feeling a lot of admiration for the guy, because it was just before the St Mirren game that he found out his dad wasn't well, completely out of the blue. I think the guy had been, you know, really healthy his whole life, and you know, I think Mark sort of thought there'd be more time and played the next couple of games against Hibs and I think Livingston, somebody played two games and then had to go back over to Ireland, and his dad wasn't around for much longer after that. But you know, he's a guy that comes in for a bit of criticism, I think, as well, from the fans sometimes through his performances, but you just don't know what's going on in these people's lives off the pitch, and you know, your heart has to go out to him, George. It's a tough loss to be dealing with at this time of the season.
Yeah, I think a tough loss, obviously, to do with whenever it happens. I've both my parents are still alive, so I haven't really experienced that. I can't imagine how difficult it'll be, particularly when you're in a job in the kind of in the public eye like a footballer, although obviously there's no public at the games and stuff, but you're still,
yeah,
everyone's kind of watching you and kind of wondering why you might not be playing it as well as you can. And that pressure that's always there, that must be really difficult to deal with when really important family stuff's going on in the background. So, I mean, it speaks a lot about him that he's able to come back and be part of the team and get back into football despite having gone through such a difficult period.
I think you forget sometimes that football players are human beings as well.
Yeah.
It's not just about football. They've got lives outside of football. Things go on, you know, and they're young guys as well. And, you know, sometimes that goes by a lot of people when you're criticising these lads on the park. You don't know what's going on in the background in their private lives, you know. And I thought Mark Connolly, the interview he did, Callum, was good. And he spoke with great strength about the situation. And it must have been really, really hard for him. And I know that he's taking great strength from the players and the manager. At Tannadice, and he spoke about his father, how his father sort of followed his career and took him to the games as a kid, and, you know, always phoned him, and now he's missing that, and that's really tough. And to say that doesn't, I mean, he is a strong character, Mark Connolly. You can see that physically as well. He's a strong character.
Yeah, he's a big lad.
But, you know, these things do affect you. So it's a great testament to him that he was able to get back on the park and give his all for the club while this was all going on in the background.
Yeah, and it's easy to forget as well. He's a young guy, you know. He's only 29, and he's only a couple of years older than me. And you look at that, and I think, you know, I'm lucky enough to still have both my parents as well. And you know, how would that affect me and my job if I lost a parent? You know, would I be able to perform to the usual levels? You know, probably not. But and the same's going to go for a footballer. You know, they're going to struggle at times, but it really sounds that the players and, you know, like players have been sending cards back home to his mum in Ireland and Mickey Mellon, I think, who lost his own father at quite a young age as well, had kind of offered him advice and a sort of arm around the shoulder and that. So, no, it was big credit to him to come and speak to us about it. And, you know, really emotional. You could see that when he was talking to us. I'm sure he won't make me saying that, you know, but... yeah, all the best to him and his family, his wife and his young kids as well. So, elsewhere off the pitch at United, we've had the finance director, Derek Bond, speaking to us this week as well about how the coronavirus has impacted the club quite severely. Much like a lot of the other clubs across the country, United have been struggling. They've lost £2 million worth of revenue. Obviously the accounts are for the 2019-20 season are yet to come out. They will tell us more, but, you know, Derek's, you know, warned that they won't make for good reading. It's just a global situation at the moment, isn't it, George, for not just football but all business and all people dealing with these problems.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I don't think anybody has been keeping an eye on things recently. Would expect the finances to come out looking rosy. Tannadice, it's the way, I guess, the way they'd modelled things before coronavirus hit. They spent a lot of money to get out of the championship, and they posted a big loss they posted last year.
I can't remember the exact figures, but it was over $3 million. It was between $3 and $4 million.
Yeah, and I think that was planned to get them out of that league and into the top flight, and then they could start recouping some of that money that they'd lost and start making more. So obviously the timing's just, it's hit them hard, I would expect, in terms of that, because they were maybe at a vulnerable point, although in terms of where their finances are. But yeah, I don't think any club's finances coming out soon are going to look too good, to be honest, on the back of COVID with no fans. And it's not a good time for most businesses or people working. So it's going to be a lot of that, I think, over the next few months, and see how badly some people are hit and companies are hit.
Yeah, Derek also mentioned that, you know, the club, he reckons, would have broken even this season if it wasn't for COVID, so it does show you the impact that's had on United and many other clubs across the country. But they are saying that they're offsetting that with the investment that they have made in things like youth development, We've seen the DUSF increasing its membership to over 1,600 people, funding coming in from that. We've seen the players playing their role. They're taking wage cuts. United have got an insurance policy taken out as well, which is sort of similar to Dundee's, which might help them. And they're also encouraging fans to go out and buy season tickets to try and help the situation. It's a tough one to continue to ask fans to dig into their pockets better, but you know, United have shown many times that they will do that.
Yeah, and that's what makes football so different from other businesses. You know, people, they're part of the community, clubs are part of the community, fans have invested in them for a lifetime. So the fans won't let clubs die. We've seen it over the road at Dens. Dundee have been on the brink a couple of times, unfortunately, in the past sort of 20 or so years. And, you know, the fans have dug deep and pulled them out. And we're seeing it right across the country now with various clubs. And United are no different to that. I think the big problem United did have is that, you know, they invested heavily to get themselves out of the Championship. And it paid off. It was a gamble that paid off. You know, they were there and they won that league, you know, at a canter to get promoted to the Premiership. And the riches, you know, the so-called riches that go with the Premiership. But you know what we mean? There is money to be made in the Premiership in terms of, you know, you are going to get bigger gates. The two games we're speaking about, Celtic at home, Aberdeen at home, almost full houses. Hospitality sold out, everything else that goes with that, a lot of money. And I've not seen that. So that's really tough. So The guy's got his work cut out. Derek, you know, obviously, what's his title? Financial controller, financial director?
Finance director.
So
£2 million hole he's got to plug
essentially. Yeah, he's got a job, but again, we'll go back to Mickey Mellon, the thing we're speaking about, the top six, just a few minutes ago. The good thing for Dundee United is they're going to be in the Premiership next season, so they can budget for that accordingly. Can you just imagine the situation if their place was unsure, what sort of situation they would have been in? So, yeah, and I think we're just all hoping that I know they're trying to sell season tickets, and the fans have rallied incredibly. You know, as I say, most clubs and clubs now are looking at season ticket packages for next season. Now it'll be interesting to see. We've got the First Minister's roadmap out of all this last week, but unfortunately she left all the good bits. Half the map was missing. She left all the good bits on the bit that was missing. You know, when are we going to start getting crowds back into stadiums? You know, when are we sort of going to get people back into the cinemas and things like that? And that's big because, well, fans were willing to shell out for a season ticket this season. There might not be so many. I'm sure a lot of people will do it again.
Yeah.
But until they're guaranteed. And I noticed your article, Callum, as well, that you need to have a credit scheme in
place. Yeah, that's what I was
going
to say. That's gone now.
Well, do you want to go and explain that? Because that's quite interesting as well.
Yeah, well, last season they were sort of incentivised to sort of buy a season ticket by saying that 17/19 of your season ticket next season will be paid for. There's no better fraction, by the way. I've tried it. 17/19 of your season ticket next season will be paid for. But that's been scrapped. So they will be expecting fans to have paid for this full season that we're in currently right now without having actually been able to get in the stadium, and potentially, you know, part of next, hopefully not all of next season, but part of next season they won't be able to get in the stadium either. So it is asking a lot of fans to do this, but knowing a lot of Dundee United fans like I do, they are a loyal bunch and passionate about their club. Like a lot of fans are, of course, but I can't see it being a problem for many. But again, in these tough financial times, you might see less uptake this time. I think they saw 4,000 or 5,000 sales last time. This time, there might be fans who think, do you know what? No, I can't afford that. You know, that's just life. That's the situation it is at the moment out there. It's tough for everyone. So,
Calum, I think Calum, just what you're saying, I think you also get a situation whereby fans won't commit, and that's a big thing because. Yeah. Yeah. Season tickets are, you know, you get your early birds and a lot of fans jump on it straight away, and you know, but the good thing is the club get a wedge of cash over the summer and are able to budget with that cash. Now if fans hang back and say, well, we're not getting in August, I'm not buying my season ticket until September. You know, but United don't have that money to go and spend and speculate on over that period, and that affects what Mickey Mellon has to spend on his squad and things like that. So,
and that's why I think they've invested so much into the youth academy, because they know that could potentially reap big rewards for them if they can't afford to bring in their own players. Like we've seen, they didn't bring anyone in January this year. You know, obviously it's not really hurt them too much because they're kind of roughly where they were before January, but it's tough. We'll see what comes out. We'll be expecting accounts from the clubs quite soon, so we'll get a better read of it from last season anyway, and see how the club can move forward from there. Elsewhere in the sort of United sphere, Dundee United fan Anish Tiwari, he recently set up an anti-racism scheme called Unify, and I spoke to him for our papers. I just wanted to just a wee bit to finish off this section of the show, just to say what terrific work he's doing. Only 22, and he's been out interviewing players from a black or ethnic minority background. Jondo Fuchs at United, Armand Gianulli at I don't think I pronounced that right, but there you go. at Hearts. So he's been out doing that and trying to raise awareness of racism in football and in the wider society as well, and how it affects people. And we've unfortunately seen that in our patch this season with Jonathan Afolabi, George, and it's still a problem that's out there. And it's good to see someone locally, and Anish, who is from an Asian background as well, doing something about it himself.
Yeah, I mean, sadly, it is a problem that continues, and we see it's almost on a weekly basis, particularly down south, that we see players getting abused on social media. So the more people like Anish step up and kind of speak out about it and get organised and put these things together, the better, and we can try and root out all this disgraceful kind of behaviour from people. I was going to say, I almost said football fans, but it's not football fans. It's just people being nasty for the sake of being nasty, I think.
Yeah, they give fans a bad name, don't they? Because it's not that's not your everyday fan that does this. It's idiots.
Aye, pretty much. So all credit to Anish and the good work he's doing, because it's obviously needed at this time that more people step up and kind of speak out about it. And speaking to players, it's really important, I think, for fans to understand some of the things that players have gone through that wouldn't be from their own kind of experiences. They wouldn't come from the same kind of background and stuff. I think that's always really important. Then you realise, oh my God, I can't believe he's had to go through that to get to the position he's in. I think that's always really important for people to read that, and I think that it's only a step in the right direction, to be honest.
It pains me to say this as much as it will for you guys listening out there to hear it, but we're going to move on to the next section of the show now to talk about the best team in Tayside. Of course I'm talking about St Johnston. I'm sorry Dundee and Dundee United fans, but not only are St Johnston the best team on Tayside at the moment, they're also the second most successful club in Scotland over the last decade after winning the Betfred Cup at the weekend. Graham, terrific achievement for the Perth Saints and for Callum Davidson.
Yeah, it's amazing how these stats come up. Second most successful club in the last decade. I think I might have touched on that last week before I was cut off on my prime, actually. The good thing was we all predicted a Saints win, didn't we? And by all accounts, I never actually saw the game, but I was listening to it on the radio, and it was thoroughly deserved. You know, there was a period I was out walking, and for about 20 minutes, Livingston never touched the ball in that second half. You know, the St Johnston looked as though they were well in command, and what an achievement. What an achievement. And I'm absolutely delighted for them. I'm delighted for the club because, they've been a shining example of how to run a football club in this country without sort of breaking the bank to do it, and long may it continue. So the whole club deserves praise for that, you know, from the owners, Jeff and Steve Brown, you know, right down to the lady, Aggie, in the tea room. It's no Aggie anymore, but you know what I mean. Everybody at the club deserves huge praise. And I'm absolutely delighted for my old colleague, James Masson, who I've got to say, you'll not be surprised to know was on the phone first thing on Monday morning. And I never said anything on the phone to him. You know, all right, Jim, how's it going? I know, bad. You know, and I said, what are you up to? You know, I had to just say it. That was a good result yesterday, Jim. You know, and he jumped in. He was on for about half an hour, but no, he was obviously thrilled. The really sad aspect of it all is that he didn't actually get to Hampden to see the game. Yeah. You know, that'll hurt so many St. Johnston fan all his life. You know, doesn't get to see the big match. Unfortunately, if he'd still been wanting for us, he might have got in. Yeah, he might have got just, in by a press pass. You never know. Yep. But that's one of those things. But no, I'm chuffed for them, and I was a thoroughly deserved win. And I think they're, you know, that going into the game leading up to the final, Livingston were probably the team on form, but they sort of went off the boil a wee bit.
Yeah.
And all their top players didn't really perform, whether they froze or you've got to give credit to St. Johnston the way they play the game. Things haven't really changed. I always think that when Tommy Wright was in charge, he used to play a three, normally a four at the back, but they've got this habit of sort of playing four centre halves or three centre halves, and they play five centre halves. So every time I looked at St. Johnston, they had this huge back line. You know, they're all seen, but all credit to them. You know, they give you very little opportunity. So yeah, well done, St. Johnston, and you know, thoroughly deserving of the title, the second most successful club in the last decade.
There you go. I know. It goes without saying the most successful club is St. Mirren, but no, of course, it's Celtic. It's Celtic. But just on that, you make a point about the defence there, Bear. Just on that, of course, Sean Rooney gets another towering header in that game to win the cup for St. Johnston. But how many of his defensive cohorts, you know, Jason Kerr, Liam Gordon, Jamie McCart, George, are they guys that you think are good enough to play for Scotland? It's been sort of spoken about recently that particularly Rooney, I think, being a right back in Scotland, maybe having a wee dearth of quality in that position, these are guys that could force their way into Steve Clark's plans.
I think there's always a place for players that are on form. I like how neither of you mentioned my prediction the last week that it was St. Johnston and Sean Rooney would be the
Was it? Were you spot on? I can't remember. I remember you said 1-0, but there you go.
Yeah.
That's the Queen of the South boys working together, you and Sean.
Well, I was very pleased for there's quite a few players that has been a good connection between my club and St. Johnston. I think the owners got on quite well. And we've had a few of theirs on loan, and Jason Kerr's certainly one I've always kept an eye on because he was absolutely excellent with us.
Yeah.
I think they took him back early in the January, and I think he must have been close to our top scorer from centre back. He was just immense for us. Xander Clark as well was another one. Sean Rooney was at us for a while and didn't exactly set the heather on fire. I wasn't his biggest fan when he was at Palmerston, but he's certainly made me eat my words, I suppose. He's
could have Sean Rooney and Lyndon Dykes playing for Scotland. I wouldn't have thought that a couple of seasons ago when I saw them, both of them jobbing about the Tannadice turf against Man United. I've
well, mentioned Dykes, that a Dykes few did times, have but... his moments at Palmerston. he was so frustrating at times, but he's really figured out the game, really. And it seems like Sean Rooney has done the same. He always had that engine on him to get up and down that right flank, but he's. Decision making wasn't always the best a few years ago. Actually, another connection to around here, he was signed by Jackie McNamara at York City.
George, are you going to answer the question about whether they can come from Scotland or not?
I forgot what the question was. I've just started rambling about York City and Jackie McNamara.
He's gone off on one, has he?
Yeah, you have. You've gone off there. Can they play for Scotland?
I think with the position, I don't think those positions are particularly set in stone in the Scotland squad, which is to their benefit, I would say. I think Jason Kerr's got it in him to be a professional. He's already a professional, an international footballer. Because he can have a look at what Declan Gallagher's done and think, I could do that. Rooney, the way he's playing at the moment, I don't see why he shouldn't be looked at, particularly with the right back slot is up for grabs, I would say. I don't think. What's his name again?
Stephen O'Donnell.
Stephen O'Donnell,
that's it. Motherwell are obviously struggling this season. I don't think he's had his best season, although I do like him. I think he's done quite well for Scotland. He's done well recently. I think Rooney could stake a claim at the very least. But it's up to them to continue the form they've shown in recent weeks, right through to the end of the season. Because there's still a wee bit of time before Scotland squads are kind of looked at for the summer and for the games before then.
Yeah, one thing you notice about the St Johnstone team that started the final and the squad in general, really, Bear, is the theme going through of guys who are either youth academy products like Chris Kane, Stevie May, Jason Kerr, Ali McCann, or guys that are came to St Johnstone at a very young age, local boys like Liam Gordon, David Wallerspoon, you know, guys like Xander Clark, being developed by the club and then going right through to the first team and getting that kind of success. It's a superb success.
And it shows, Colin, it shows on the pitch. That's all I can say. They look like a team. Yeah. It's not one, it's not individual, it's a collective sum of not just 11 players, but the full squad, you know, and that's what other teams, not a million miles away from this mic, should look at, you know what I'm saying? They've got that, and they've got that desire and the hunger not to let your teammate down. They're not thinking about themselves, they're thinking about the team and doing well and, you know, giving their all, and it was great to see, and you know, what can you say? They're just a shining example of how to run a football club.
The kind of success we can only dream of on this street. 11 years since United won a trophy of my major honour, and I can't even do the math since Dundee last won a trophy, Bear. A long time.
It's
48 years. Something
it's
like
the December 1973, the winter of discontent, Hampden Park. I was an early kickoff because I don't think they wanted to use the floodlights because there was power cuts and things like that, you know. So I was fortunate enough to be there that day, I've got to say. As a young lad, I had my parka on, got absolutely drenched, but it didn't matter because Gordon Wallace stuck one past, I think it was Ali Donaldson Ali Donaldson's Dundee goalkeeper.
I was going to say that.
He wasn't that day. It was Thompson Allen that was in goal for Dundee, but it was Ali, I think it's Ali Hunter, who was the Celtic goalkeeper, and I remember it well.
You seem to remember it well.
I've still got my parka.
Just shows you how long ago it was, but it's days that hopefully we can see return to Tannadice/Sandyman Street sometime soon.
There's some breaking news as we're recording. The new dates for the Scottish Cup have just been announced. So
here we go.
St Johnstone against Dundee, or is it Dundee against St Johnstone?
Dundee St Johnstone.
Will be on Tuesday the 20th. No, that's the second round. Second round will be played Tuesday the 23rd of March, third round Saturday 3rd of April, fourth round 17th of April.
Right.
So whichever round it is, I can't remember. It's been so long. But
are you all right, George?
I'm just enjoying life, having a wee break from work, that's all.
It's just emotional.
No, I honestly can't remember what round we're at, is all.
I think it's third. I think it's Thursday. That'll be United. They'll be playing either Partick Thistle or Cowden Beef, if my memory serves me right. So, who knows? Yep, who knows? We do have the Scottish Cup left to play, so we'll see how that all pans out. But thanks for listening. Until next time, take care, and we'll see you later. Goodbye.
If you like the podcast, we'd be grateful if you tell your pals about it. Or even better, leave a review or a simple rating on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. All that really helps people find Twa Teams One Street, and that means a lot to us. Don't forget to pick up your copy of the Tilly Monday to Saturday for all the latest from Dens and Tannadice, or go to thetilly.co.uk to find out how you can get the paper delivered right to your door.